And we're back. Thanks for staying tuned to WVFF 97.7 FM and now more true crime in the Lowcountry.
He'd been paralyzed for 21 years. He spoke with the wife and was advised of his daily routine consisting of going to the pool every morning, and nothing was unusual that morning, and he wasn't suicidal. The detective said he reviewed the surveillance, which is motion-activated, and the victim, which was Chris, makes entry into the pool with his dog, and then at 7:56, his wheelchair is seen moving towards the water, and then the victim falls in along with his wheelchair, which he is strapped to and is seen attempting to pull his head up. The victim's underwater for about 40 minutes before someone locates him and calls it in. The only thing that I have a question on this is that the victim was underwater for 40 minutes before someone locates him. Was he going really early to just hang out at the pool by himself? Like, what time was he meeting the guy to play, or the guy or woman to play chess with? Why was someone there 40 minutes late? I don't know. Maybe they were most meeting at 9. I don't know.
Well, I got to tell you something crazy. You try and put the dots together. If I was going to meet somebody at the pool, I would expect to see them above the water level, not below the water level. So I could sit 20 feet, 25 feet at a table at the pool side, and never look in the pool and see somebody at the bottom of the pool.
That's true. Here's an online claim. This is an online claim, and this is what they say. This is from a guy who's got a lot of followers. He says, surveillance footage, this is exactly from him, surveillance footage suggests a different story. Chris was nowhere near the edge of the pool when it all of a sudden accelerated into the pool. Okay? That's what they're saying online. Just the other day. But the Myrtle Beach Police Department, who, detectives, they're trained at this. They've seen plenty of deaths in Myrtle Beach. The victim then stops at a curb in the pool and then suddenly moves quickly forward and goes into the water. Myrtle Beach Police. The Horry County coroner's report. This morning, he appears to have gotten too close to the pool edge, causing the wheel to slip, and he fell into the pool. Now, that's from the coroner, that's from the police department, but online, surveillance footage suggests a different story. Chris was nowhere near the edge of the pool. Okay, come on, people. Listen, I'm the first one to question everything that law enforcement does to make sure they do it right, but I don't know how you screw this one up. I haven't seen the alleged video, but it's got to be pretty cut and dry for both of them to say that.
I don't know.
Online calling it an alleged incident.
Is that footage? Is that FOIA-able? Is that a word, FOIA-able? Can that be FOIA?
Yeah. I don't know if it is. I haven't tried to FOIA it. I know that the it's out there floating around. It's not. I think it's been scrubbed from the internet, but I don't have it. But I can just picture it based off of their descriptions of what happened. I really don't want to watch somebody drown, honestly.
Well, yeah. Listen, and the truth of the matter is, you probably wouldn't see them drowned from that footage, because I think you'd lose sight of the wheelchair as it hits the water, and certainly as it goes to the bottom.
So something. Is the case reopened? Despite recent speculation, the Chris Skinner case is not been reopened.
Well, it stinks. It really does stink,
They were given new information. That's it. And then based off of their job, which is their job, they're going to look at it. They're going to investigate whatever is sent to them. Now, whether they ever come out and say it's credible or not, who knows? And if they do, then they'll reopen the case. They'll officially come out and say this case is reopened. As of today, it is not. Whoever is listening to this, if you're writing that it's reopened, stop it, because it's not. And if you don't believe me, listen, don't believe me. You know what? Don't believe me. Go ahead and call Ara Willard yourself, Myrtle Beach Corner. She'll tell you the exact same words. I'm just relaying what she told a news organization. That's it.
Hey, Jim, what about the damn fisherman?
I think that was just an accident. You know, it just happens to be that, you know, he had some sort of part in it. You know, and there was a lot of people that, you know, and of course, John, listen, there's some people out there, John Paul Miller, you know, assassinated JFK. You know what I mean? Even though he's 40 years old. He's responsible for anything and anything bad that happens in the state of South Carolina. I'm like,
Can we pin Dorothy Kilgallen on him?
Who?
Dorothy Kilgallen. You're going to tell me that Dorothy Kilgallen is not your hero? Dorothy Kilgallen died in New York City in her apartment. She was an investigative reporter, and she supposedly had some breaking news that was going to be disclosed on the Kennedy assassination, and she died under mysterious circumstances that were supposedly an accidental drug overdose, but everything was so...
Oh, yeah, her and Marilyn Monroe, right?
Yeah, her and Marilyn Monroe. Yeah. And... Dorothy Kilgallen.
It was the same CIA agent that killed Marilyn Monroe that killed...
Peter Lawford killed Marilyn Monroe. It was Peter Lawford. Do you know, she had a phenobarbital, overdose, Marilyn Monroe. And she had no phenobarbital in her stomach. Believe it or not, it was induced by a phenobarbital suppository or quantity thereof.
Yikes.
That was the cause of death, yeah. Yeah. So, that's pretty nasty. But, I don't know. This J.P. Miller thing, you know, they got a piece of legislation in South Carolina about... coercive control and this and that, and
actually they don't. They're trying to get...
Well, they what do you call it? There's an attorney that's pushing the hell out of it. You know, what's her name?
Her name is Attorney Regina Ward.
Yeah. I don't even know if it's... I don't know if the legislation has been submitted, if it's been put into committee, if it's out of committee. Nothing?
It's been nothing. Nothing. Well, she's tried to get somebody to push it, to put it out there, but nobody is...
I got to tell you, I mean, I listened to her originally when she was promoting this piece of legislation, and... It's scary. I think what it does in a large part, it removes personal responsibility from the individual, and makes a lot more victims, you know. And it's very vague to me, and it's something that, you know, if you haven't experienced them, you can't understand why they're necessary, and that's the case in my case. It's totally crazy.
Okay, so listen, I've got some... if you haven't been following me at ccnewsnetwork.com or crimeandcast.com or TikTok or YouTube, all the different places I am about to tell you, and we're going to switch gears a little bit. You move out of J.P. Miller. Talk about Alex Murdaugh.
Oh, okay.
I have definitive I mean, there's no way to get out of it. Definitive information that, you remember the steps? Remember the steps that they took and they said, you know, this time to this time?
Yeah.
And the steps, and hey, you know, Mr. Murdoch, you took 283 steps. Whoa, that was a lot of steps you took there, Mr. Murdoch. Remember that?
Yep.
Okay. World premiere. You've never heard this information. I don't care who you are, who you follow. You have never, ever heard this information until now on 97.7, unless you follow me, because I just posted this story the other day. The full story is up. That Alex Murdaugh's stepdata, presented at trial by SLED agent Radulski, was false. And I'm not saying the word alleged, because there's not alleged. I prove it. I'm going to walk you through it right here. So it was, of course, the trial that captivated, you know, your listening audience for sure. But that information, they used that. The state used that walking that step information a lot, because it was after the 9 o'clock hour when allegedly Paul and Maggie had already been killed.
All right.
That all of a sudden his steps go from, you know, minimal steps to, wow, he's just taking crazy steps all over the place. Like, you know, it just jumps. And they talk about the hour. In fact, you know what? You want to hear Creighton Waters? I think I might be able to tee this up. You want to hear Creighton Waters say it?
Sure, sure.
Let's see if I got it.
As long as it's not copyrighted, we're good.
Yeah, no, it's not. Okay, let's see if I can get it back.
5 to 809. It's showing approximately 74 steps at 17.28 steps per minute.
Step 5. That was the last entry on Alex's phone before we get to the 9 o'clock hour. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Here we go.
What time was the video again?
8:44 p.m.
Let's talk about 27. What's the time period there?
Time period can be 9:02 to 9:06.
How many steps?
283 steps. 70.75 steps per minute, estimated.
It's a busy guy out then, wasn't it?
It appears.
Okay.
What was the average steps per minute?
70.75.
Is that far in excess of any ratings on his phone in those prior entries?
According to this table, yes.
According to this table, yes. You heard him say it.
All right.
Right,
so
according to this table, yes.
All right. Where's
that
the error?
Very important. That is important. According to this table, yes. That gives him plausible deniability. He's got to know that the numbers are wrong, because here's the information. From 9:02, I was just looking at this, and all of a sudden, it just jumped out at me. He said 4 minutes, and in fact, on his spreadsheet, it says 4 minutes, time elapsed. And I'm looking at the numbers, and I'm like, wait a second. I mean, not 4 minutes and 1 second or 2 seconds, 4 minutes exactly. And I'm looking at it, I'm going 9:02:18 to 9:06:47. I'm like, that's not 4 minutes. If it was 4 minutes, it'd be 9:02:18 to 9:06:18. Uh-oh. He forgot to add in the extra 29 seconds, almost a half minute he forgot to add in. So his steps that he has at 70.75, they plummet down to 63.12. Completely wrong. His timing was wrong. His steps are wrong. He even got it wrong with Paul at 8:15 to 8:21. They said he took 17.87 steps, and the numbers are 24. So Paul was walking faster. And then Alec at 7:03 to 7:11 was 19.26. And that's wrong. It was 21.81. It doesn't seem like a lot, but it goes from 19 to 22, basically. But the big one is 70.75 steps per minute. And that number under oath was completely wrong. And it wasn't wrong by a little bit. Like the next one, it was like 61.2 steps he had, and the actual was 61.45. Okay, I'm not going to bust his chops over, you know, 0.25 tenths of a second steps per minute. But that one, it drops from 70 to 63. So, I mean, completely wrong. And there's four entries in here that are wrong. He's got 24 entries. That means that the information that he presented at trial, 17% of this whole data sheet is completely wrong.
So, and you're telling me that this rocket scientist jury never picked up on this?
Nobody picked up on it, Frank. I'm the only one in the whole planet, the universe. I've never heard this information from anybody before. In fact, I'm disappointed in myself that it's March 26th, and I just discovered this like 2 days ago. Like, I wrote two books about the damn thing. How in the hell did I miss this? But I missed it. So did everybody else. So did Dick Harpootlian. So did Jim Griffin. Now, the big question is did the prosecution actually miss this? I mean, how many hands did that go through before it went up on the stand under oath to be presented as fact? I don't know. But did they really just make mistakes, or did they fluff their numbers? I can't answer
that. All right, let's ask the rhetorical question. What impact do you think this had on the case?
Well, I think it's, you know, every single person that gets on the stand is a, you know, think of it like a deck of cards, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're building something that's going to tip over, whatever it is. Use whatever analogy you want to. You got to take and put one on top of the other.
Yes,
and
yes. You start to get it's one of the many building blocks that what do you call it, that built the case. Yeah.
Right, but if you take one of those building blocks out, what happens to the building? Starts to crumble. So was it definitive? You know, somebody was like, they made their decision based off his stuff. No, probably not. But I will tell you this, the prosecution made a big deal out of his steps. That the 9 o'clock hour was the most steps when he woke up. Oh, you were busy. You were walking all around, Mr. Murdoch. You were walking all around. Well, okay. We got time. Let's go through that because I did an actual video on this the other day. You're going to love this. So this got me starting to think, right? I'm thinking to myself, what else could be going wrong with this particular case? And so it all comes down to 9/06/12 on June 7th, 2021, the night Paul and Maggie were killed. 9/06/12. And why does 9/06/12? What does 9/06/12 mean? Do you know? I'm gonna tell you if you don't. So 9/06/12 was the time that Alec Murdoch was standing outside of his house. This is confirmed by SLED. This is confirmed by the FBI. This is confirmed by GPS data and his Apple step data. Okay? So at 9/06/12, Alec Murdoch makes a phone call to his wife at 9/06/12. And it's for 3 seconds. And her phone makes an orientation change from landscape to portrait. Again, I said Alex is outside. So her phone makes a change. It records that change. Okay? Now, Alec is outside. His phone is recording steps. Her phone is not recording steps. So what happens then? He said he hung up the phone because he thought that he heard them coming up. What he really heard coming up was the real killers driving down Moselle Road past the front entrance. And so all of a sudden he's like, well, that's not them. So he called her back. And when he called her back, Her phone made another orientation change at 9:06:20 from portrait to landscape or sideways, and that's it. That's the last Maggie's phone makes any kind of movement, records any steps, does anything besides a backlight coming on and off if there was a notification. But there's no recorded anything. The phone doesn't move. Okay? So we understand that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now it's 9:06:20, and here's what happens next. 907. Hold on, Alex's movement. Let's get to Alex's movement. So 9:06. There we go. Alex is sitting in his Suburban at 9:06:52. So 9:06:20, he's still outside. Her phone doesn't make any more movements. He is still outside. And according to the state of South Carolina, he has her phone. Recall that in the
trial?
He still had her phone. So what the state is trying to make you and the jury believe is that from 9:06:20, as Alec is outside with his phone, and his phone is recording steps according to the FBI and the GPS and all that, Maggie's phone is not. Her phone has stopped recording anything. But he still has it because he's got to take it into the Suburban, because he's got to drive out of Moselle, and he's got to turn right onto Moselle Road, and he's got to throw her phone out. So the time between between he driving past where her phone was and 9:06:20 is 2 minutes and 14 seconds. So Sled is trying to say to you, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, he has her phone, but for 2 minutes and 14 seconds, it didn't make any movements. But at 9:06:53, Alec finally gets to his Suburban, and his iPhone connects to his Suburban. At 9:07:06, Alex departs Moselle, leaving for his parents' house. At 9:08:36, he enters Moselle Road. So now he types in a message at 9:08:58 that says, going to check on M, be right back. Now, it sends at 9:08:58. However, at 9:06:36, he enters Moselle Road. And so 36, 46, 50, so 22 seconds. So when he's on Moselle Road to the time that he sends the message, so he's typed the message out prior to this, but he sends it at 9:08:58. That's 22 seconds. That's not a whole lot of time. And I have gone out to Moselle myself, and I have gotten at the main gate, and I know where Maggie's phone was found, and I marked where Maggie's phone was found, and I drove at the speed that they said he did. First it was 17 miles an hour, and then he got up to 42 miles an hour. So by the time I was at 42 miles an hour, and I'm driving with my knees, basically, because I'm trying to type the words, going to check on him, be right back, every single time, and I did this 20 times, Frank, I drove past the spot where Maggie's phone was thrown out.
Hey, Jim, they actually established the time of death using Maggie's phone. Is that correct?
They did, based off of it being locked, and I think it got locked at 8:49:26, her phone locked. So that's when they said
establishing when her phone locked, where was Alec?
Well, there's no digital evidence that proves Alec being at the kennels or at his house, but he said he was at the house.
He was
at the kennel. He was at the kennel at 8:44:55. So 8:45. And he said he was there for maybe a minute. He got the chicken out of Bubba's mouth, put the chicken up, and he got in the golf cart and he left. Because he's like, I didn't want to do what I thought was going to happen. And they were like, what's that? He's like, sweat. I didn't want to sweat. So I went back to the house. So he got back in his golf cart and he left. And then Paul's phone locked. And then Paul's phone locked at 8:49:01. And Maggie's phone locked at 8:49:26. So, and I said before, those woods that are outside of the dog kennels, from the woods to Pegram is about a 10-second walk. Maybe not even that, but a 10-second walk. You walk up to Paul. You take 10 seconds. You walk up to Paul. His phone locks at 8:49:01. You got about 10, 12 seconds. That's 8:49:13. Let's call it 8:49:15. You know, a couple of, you know, screw you, kind of things happen. And a blast happens at 8:49:31 when she's about to read a group text. So she locks her phone and she comes out of the hangar and she runs 30 feet before she's dropped. So figure it takes about 7 seconds or so for a human to go 30 feet. And so she probably died somewhere around 8:49:45, 8:49, 8:50.
I got a whole bunch of questions that I really, really don't want to even put on the radio. Things that are mitigating in this trial that can affect the whole. Can affect the whole structure of South Carolina. I mean, this is crazy. I'll mention it off the air, and if you want to talk about it, that's great. But I'm not talking about it. And wow! Man,
listen. There was two people that did this, and I believe you say that Stephen Smith thing was a standalone. I don't believe so. I think Paul knew who killed Stephen Smith.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
And I think someone thought that he was going to use that information to get out of his boat wreck.
All right.
And then was going to put them in jeopardy of going to prison.
All right. Wow. Listen, you know what I want to know?
What?
Now they reopened the Stephen Smith case, right? At some point because they found information on whose laptop? Didn't they find?
I don't know if it was information on a laptop, but if you watch the video of Sled interviewing Buster Murdoch, they talk to Buster. It's about three quarters, maybe almost 85% way through the video, and they talk to Buster. He's in a squad car and they're filming it, and they talked to Buster about Stephen Smith and what they wanted to know a lot about Stephen Smith, and had he heard anything about Paul, about him, about anybody saying anything about Stephen Smith, like would the Stephen Smith thing be tied to this? So early on, you're talking a day, 2 days after, Sled is trying to put Stephen Smith together with the killings of Paul and Maggie. They should have kept on it because that's what it is. Anybody from Sled wants to talk to me about it, I can tell you the names of the two people who I think it is. That's where it came from.
Every time I talk to you about this, my brain ends up hurting.
Oh, you think about me. I've been doing this crap for 2 years.
Well, listen, that explains a lot. That I don't know. I still...
But, I mean, I don't think you understand the gravity of what Sled was trying to get you to believe, that for 2 minutes and 14 seconds, as Alec is walking and his phone is making recorded movements, Maggie's phone is doing nothing, zero, nada. Now, you've got to explain this to me. How can a man who's high on opioids, who's got bad knees, 6'4", and has got his phone, and he's trying to call her and text her, when he's got her phone, maybe he's got it in his pocket. Okay. Well, even if he has it in his pocket, my phone still records my steps when I have it in my pocket. As long as you're just walking, if you're on a bike or you're in a car, it won't record it. Or if your phone is on the side of the road and no one's touching it, it won't record steps. And so they're trying to say, even though he had her phone for 2 minutes and 14 seconds, he didn't make her phone do anything.
Do you know what this drills down to? If you're going to commit a murder, you got to get butt naked, all right, and put on a Tyvek suit and gloves.
Yeah.
All right, and leave your phone behind, and cover your face, because between cameras doing facial recognition, between DNA, between getting tracked by your phone, between getting tracked, and you better walk there because you're going to be tracked by your car. Holy moly. Jim.
Oh, yeah.
Jim.
We're being tracked. Big Brother's here.
Holy moly. I mean, you know, listen, just do me one favor. Make 1984 fiction again. You know?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my. Hey, Jim. You know, we killed an hour here. We killed just...
Remember that they told us that it was going to make our lives easier? Computer.
Well, listen, I got to tell you something. You know, I grew up with... my undergraduate degree is in media. And I had Frank Maselli as a department head. And I actually, at one point... was in a class where Marshall McLuhan attended, and we were told that the media age was going to give us an incredible amount of free time that we wouldn't know what to do with. little did we know that they were going to give us the jobs of three people and the ability to handle them with the digital age. Hey, Jimmy, listen, are we going to get together next week again?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. And let's knock it off for today, because you made my brain hurt.
I hope I made people think. And if you want to read more about what Frank and I talked today, go to crimeandcast.com. ccnewsnetwork.com. Follow me on TikTok. Listen, all your fans that are 97.7 FM, WVFFM, I want them to go to TikTok, because I am almost at 100,000 followers.
Oh, God help
you. I said to you when I was 97.7.
All right.
I'm closer than that. I'm at 99.7.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what radio station that is, but I'm at 99.7. I'm almost at 100,000.
All right.
Follow me.
And listen, and that's CC News. CC News is, that's what he called. That's reminiscent of Drudge, and I've said this to you numerous times. It's reminiscent of what Drudge was back in the Breitbart days. Gotta get there.
And the next thing I'm going to be taking on, Frank, is a guy by the name of Quentin Banks, he was murdered back in 2024, June 23rd, 2024, in an apartment complex near Bamberg, actually in the town of Denmark. You know where that is?
I know exactly where Denmark is. Oh, man.
Yep.
All right.
I'm going to start investigating that, because that's an unsolved murder that SLED is requesting anyone with information in that shooting.
So listen,
I'm going to take that one on.
When you're in Denmark, give me a holler, because that's not that far away, and I'll catch up to you there. But Jimmy, I'm compelled to say goodbye at this point. And
yep, let's do it.
You're listening to WVFF 97.7 LPFM Red Brick Patriot Radio. You've been listening to Crime and Cask with Jim Cask and CCNews.com. And wow. Hey, Jimmy, thank you very much. And I will talk to you next week.
We're out of here.
All right. We're out of here, buddy. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye.
And that's all the time we have for now on True Crime in the Low Country. We hope you've enjoyed our in-depth coverage of the Murdaugh murder trial so far. Don't worry, we'll be back soon to dive even deeper into the case and bring you more chilling stories from the Low Country region. We thank you for listening to Veterans for Freedom Radio, The Truth in Broadcasting Corporation.